Hello, it's Tuesday, October 17th, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. Last year, Professor Jim Fetzer and the Scholars for 9/11 Truth broke onto the scene and really gave the 9/11 Truth movement a shot in the arm that it very much needed. But Jim Fetzer hasn't ever been a stranger to this type of research because he's the author of three books on the John Kennedy assassination, including Murder in Dealey Plaza, the great Zapruder film hoax, and also Assassination Science.
And that's just a fraction of the books he's actually authored or edited.
Right. He's also the author of a fantastic book on the murder, and that's right, I said the word murder, of Senator Paul Wellstone, which we think is one of the best books ever written on assassination. But now, before bringing Jim on, we have to say that in our opinion, there's been way too much mamby-pamby, ring-around-the-rosy activity in regard to 9/11. I mean, after all, we're dealing with some of the most bloodthirsty criminals you can imagine. Now, luckily, Jim Fetzer is no pushover, and we saw that firsthand when we attended a Zacharias Moussaoui press conference that he and others gave in Alexandria, Virginia.
Nope, he didn't back down from customs agents either, with the ICE, Department of Homeland Security.
Right, they tried to prevent him from speaking, and to his credit, he stood his ground and was ultimately allowed to speak. So, Jim's not afraid to mix it up, and he's a great debater, as we've heard on many different shows, which is good because today we're not going to do your typical 9/11 interview about the controlled demolition, the Pentagon, and material that's been covered in countless other interviews.
By all three of us.
Right. Instead, we're going to touch upon some what you might call taboo subjects in regard to the mainstream media, the 9/11 movement's suppression of vital information, political ideology, and even morality. So, we're going to ask Jim today some tough questions. And to his credit, he's agreed to come on to Wing TV. Believe me, most people are afraid to.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've never, ever for once thought Jim Fetzer was fearful
of anything,
of approaching any topic, and I still remain to this day, I believe he is fearless
right, when
it comes to open discussion and debate.
Yeah. And the questions we're going to ask today aren't meant to be confrontational or controversial. We're asking them because they need to be asked, and they need to be answered. And we think Jim Fetzer is the perfect guest. So we'd like to welcome Professor Jim Fetzer to Wing TV.
Hey,
how you doing, Jim?
Hey, thanks, Victor and Lisa. It's a pleasure to be on with you again.
Well, congratulations on your retirement that we recently heard about and all your good work on 9/11. Before we start, let everybody know how they can find not only your own site, but the Scholars for 9/11 Truth website.
Well, that's the more important, of course. It's st911.org. st911.org.
Okay.
In mid-December, I founded Scholars for 9/11 Truth and invited Steve Jones, the physicist from BYU, to be my co-chair. And today, the society has steadily grown. We have well over 300 members divided into four different categories, more than 200 with research abilities in relation to one aspect or another of the case, and around 80 to 85 who have academic affiliation.
Very good, and I know we've been on that site many, many times. So, to start the show off today, Jim, we know that you've been on Bill O'Reilly's show. You've been on with Hannity and Combs. And my first question is, what is your impression, now that you've spoken with these people, do they know the truth, and are they stonewalling, or are they absolutely so controlled that even if God himself came down and said 9/11 was an inside job, they wouldn't be able to fess up to it? What's your impression of these guys in the mainstream media?
Well, my impression is, by and large, if you talk about Hannity and Combs and O'Reilly, is they actually don't seem to know enough about the case to really understand the enormity of the evidence and how devastating it is to the government's position. They seem to me to be playing a role in relation to their corporations, their networks, in particular, of course, in this case, Fox News, of trying to defend the government and the interest, political interests of the right wing. I don't think there's much question about it. There's nothing fair and balanced about their approach. The one I have dealt with where I suspect that he knew enough to realize that what I was saying was very close to the mark was Oliver North, who sat in for Hannity the first time I appeared on the program.
We saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it seems to me, as as I observed then, knows enough about these kinds of compartmentalized covert operations where you only have information on a need-to-know basis to realize that most of those who were involved in this matter didn't really understand the role they were performing.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it was rather easy to get their cooperation and effort in securing an objective which, had they only known, they might very well have hesitated or refused to do.
Right.
If memory serves me, Jim, you also made an appearance, or at least once, on Alan Combs' radio show. Combs now represents the Democrat, the anti-war viewpoint. He seems to be liberal and presents that perspective. Yet, these people in the anti-war Democrat grouping, they supposedly hate the Bush administration and they want to take them down, yet they will not expose the truth about 9/11. I mean, and outside of the context of LIHOP, they won't touch it. Why the roaring silence from this anti-war crowd?
Well, I think Alan Combs is a very interesting case, Lisa, because after I appeared on Hannity and Combs the first time on the 22nd of June, the following week he actually had me on his national radio broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, it was either that week or early the following week, he was substituting as a host in a New York broadcast, and he had me on again.
Uh-huh.
And the first time I was on, I was expecting to be attacked, the way I had been previously, and was probably overly defensive. I said a lot, but the way I said it could have been done in a gentler and kinder fashion. When he had me back on in New York, however, I'd understood and appreciated that he seemed to have a genuine interest in this, and especially with a broadcast in New York, and it was extremely good. I was acutely disappointed to discover that that particular broadcast had not been recorded or archived so that I could put it up on our website.
Uh-huh.
Now, speaking more generally, it seems to me that there's a tremendous amount of anxiety and nervousness that emanates from some of those who are more prominent in the so-called left movement, such as, say, Amy Goodman as an illustration.
Right.
Noam Chomsky seems to me to be a different category, but we can talk about him, too, where they're very hesitant to get involved in the deep water of 9/11, probably out of a fear of embarrassment. They don't want to discredit themselves when they don't know enough to understand what's actually going on. The best thing they could do in that situation is to elicit, you know, have interviews with guests who know a great deal and simply elicit their information without taking a stand one way or another.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. Well, Jim, one of our great disappointments is that we see this trend in the 9/11 movement where ultimately it seems like they're trying to protect the real criminals responsible for 9/11, and there's a great deal of evidence, as you've seen in the book 9/11 Evil, that in our opinion and that of others is that those responsible for 9/11 ultimately were the Israel First neocons within our own government, plus elements of the Israeli government. So it's been 5+ years now. We already know about the controlled demolition. We know about the Pentagon. We know about the Shanksville hoax. Why are people so afraid to point the finger at the real criminals, which includes the nation of Israel?
Well, let me just turn that around a little bit, Victor. You guys were kind enough to send me a copy of your new book, 9/11 Evil.
Mm-hmm.
And I have read most of the book, though not all of it, but I'm very glad to tell you that it seems to me that there is a wealth of information here. I felt I was learning from almost every page that tends to provide a very substantial case in support of the proposition you have just enumerated, where the key thesis of your book appears on page 70, to wit, that 9/11 was an intricately planned act of state-sponsored terrorism concocted by a foreign government, Israel, in unison with an ardently loyal faction of neocon crazies who had burrowed their way into the Pentagon, State Department, and White House. Assisting them were a host of defense contractors, computer gurus, and explosive experts who made the whole thing happen on the morning of September 11, 2001. Now, I think the way you patiently lay out your case, including the dancing Israelis and the urban moving systems and the connections between Larry Silverstein and Benjamin Netanyahu and Ariel Sharon and all of this, is extremely persuasive. And when you talk about the dancing Israelis, of course, a lot of us have heard of them and not paid a lot of attention. If you were to go
right
on to go to st911.org and scroll down to foreign perspectives, however, you'll find I have archived there three different pieces about them. Five Israelis seen filming as jetliners plowed into the Twin Towers.
Mm-hmm.
Five dancing Israelis arrested on 9/11. Three of the dancing Israelis interviewed a video. So I would encourage anyone who wants to, you know, take a serious look at the hypothesis that that Israel, the Mossad in particular, played a key role here in 9/11.
Well, Jim, we want to thank you for
suggesting ought to take a good look at this book and at that additional support for, under the category of foreign perspectives. I think I would recommend every serious student of 9/11 needs to read your book, Victor. And let me just explain why, from the point of view of scientific reasoning, I think your book is so important. This, of course, is my principal area of research. I've published, 27 books. A lot of them have been on the theoretical character of scientific knowledge. So scientific reasoning in general is a pattern that falls into four steps or stages. First, there's puzzlement. You encounter a phenomenon you don't readily understand. You're not able to integrate with your background knowledge and beliefs. A puzzlement in this case would arise over the events in New York, in the Pentagon, and in Shanksville or in Pennsylvania on 9/11. Then there's speculation. Speculation is the crucial stage of considering the full range of alternative possible explanations. Now, one possible explanation, of course, the government has given us is that the plane impact plus the jet fuel fires led to the weakening or melting of the steel, which led to a pancake collapse and the buildings fell. That's an hypothesis. An alternative hypothesis would be that the buildings actually came down by controlled demolition of a, not of, in this case, with regard to the Twin Towers, a conventional kind where you're blowing buildings, blowing them up or bringing them down from the bottom up, but in this case from the top down, for which there's an enormous amount of evidence. And then, of course, we have Building 7, which was a conventional kind of controlled demolition of being blown up from the bottom up. So that one of the obvious differences you can see is in the case of Building 7, all the floors are moving together as the mm-hmm. building collapses down. In the case of the Twin Towers, none of the floors are moving. They're sitting by waiting for their time to be blasted to smithereens.
You're right.
It's creating this huge dust cloud and all of that. Now, once we establish that, the events in New York and in particular at the Pentagon and in Pennsylvania do not accord with the government's account, when you adapt them to the evidence, which is the third stage, you take the alternative hypotheses and adapt them to the available evidence, where the government has been going way out of its way to make sure that we don't have all the evidence that ought to be available. Again, if you go on st911.org and look in the upper left-hand corner, you'll see this petition to the government, which we've actually sent to every member of the House of Representatives and every member of the United States Senate, asking for the release of key evidence in 12 different categories. Just reading through that petition, you realize how massively the government has withheld evidence.
Right.
And past the stage of adaptation, once you establish which hypotheses receive stronger support than the alternatives, once the evidence settles down, you're entitled to accept the preferable hypothesis, albeit in the tentative, infallible fashion characteristic of science, which means if new hypotheses are advanced or new evidence becomes available or you discover some of your old evidence really turned out to be fabricated, faked, and it has to be jettisoned, then you can revise the situation based on logic and the new body of evidence. Now, what's crucial about your book is because there's been an utter failure to take very seriously the hypothesis that when it comes to those who are involved in bringing about the events of 9/11, that the Mossad or the Israeli government could have had a key role to play. And that seems to me to be extremely important and very, very well investigated in your book. So when I recommend your book, it's not that I'm saying I think everyone should believe everything that you have to say. I have a few questions I would, hope to pose to you today, but I am saying is this is extremely important in giving what I would call a very nice preliminary outline of evidence that tends to suggest, even in some cases strongly support the hypothesis that the Mossad and the Israeli government had a very intimate role to play in the events of 9/11.
To follow up on that then, There's another roaring silence that we are seeing, and it's in the 9/11 truth movement, Jim. I've contacted directly prominent 9/11 truth groups, people like Janice Matthews of 9/11truth.org. She's the executive director. Dave Von Kleist, Lori Price, Alex Jones, the Loose Change Crew, Dylan Avery, all of these people, Mike Rivero, and encouraged them to investigate this and pursue this area of research that is totally under-addressed by most of these personalities. And I got responses. Give me a second here because I want to tell you what the responses were. Janice Matthews of 911truth.org said, "I'm not interested in discussing this." Dave Von Kleist said, "I'm not the guy." Now, he was a moderator at a decidedly anti-Zionist conference in D.C. at the beginning of September, so for him to say he's not the guy kind of puzzles and perplexes me. Lori Price has her own script that we're supposed to use, and we're only supposed to stick to the Bush-Cheney aspect of 9/11 and not venture beyond that. Alex Jones gave no response. Dylan Avery of Loose Change gave no response. And Mike Rivero gave me a non-answer. He stalled, which is what he's done to me before. So
the big question is, why are so many people in this 9/11 movement afraid to touch Israel's involvement?
Why are they either wittingly or unwittingly suppressing this area of research?
Well, I don't think it's so much protecting as it may be a genuine bona fide fear. I mean, you know, look, you got this guy Michael Chertoff with joint citizenship who appears to have played a key role. He got the dancing Israelis released.
Uh-huh.
You're talking about another case involving, you know, the exposure of a very large-scale Israeli spy ring in the United States involving some 100 agents. He was also responsible for getting them cleared and returned to Israel. And now this guy is the head of Homeland Security. Personally, whatever our take about what happened to Christopher Bolin, it appears very clear that this was a Homeland Security operation where he was assaulted, tasered, brutalized, beat up by the police. I mean, this is a completely shocking event, but it seems to me utterly consistent with the abuse of power to try to intimidate journalists or scholars or experts who would pursue these issues, just as you are.
Jim, I'm going to have to disagree with you.
You are showing, in my opinion, great courage and integrity in addressing this issue. If from the point of view of science, you have to go with the evidence. You have these five guys on this rooftop who were filming the events as they took place and celebrating, and they were being very conspicuous about it, evidently because they were dressed as Arabs and were trying to create the impression that there were Arabs who had foreknowledge, but of course they're arrested and they turn out to be Israelis.
Right.
And of course you have the close connection between Larry Silverstein and Benjamin Netanyahu, and I can just imagine, you know, Silverstein and Netanyahu have many, many conversations about how, you know, the United States might be brought to do the bidding of Israel in the Middle East. I mean, if you look at, you know, the nation or the motive who actually benefit from our going into the Middle East, it's overwhelmingly Israel.
Right.
Overwhelmingly Israel.
Yeah. Right.
Well, let me follow up on this. This is a real brief excerpt from an email from a New York City 9/11 activist named Scott Summers. And he says, "Why is the truth movement overrun by closet Zionists? Why are so many people satisfied with half-assed 9/11 truth? This is exactly why the 9/11 truth movement is not really going anywhere. Everybody wants to be politically correct and play dumb on serious issues. Everybody is protecting Zionists they know are guilty. How the hell is it that nobody wants to discover and compile a list of the names of the people who did 9/11? Ignorance at this late stage in the game is no longer an acceptable excuse. If you're covering up, obfuscating, or just plain wasting our time..." That's what we're trying to get at, Jim, is it's been 5 years now. We know how they did it. We know why they did it. We know what the motives are. Isn't it time to finally point a finger and say, this is who did it?
Yeah, but look, you got to appreciate every individual you're dealing with has his own background and limited understanding of these issues. None of us knows everything there is to know about it. Now, what is in fact the case is that you and Lisa have been very enterprising, have shown a great deal of intelligence and resourcefulness in getting to the heart of the matter. But there's a psychological obstacle that has to be overcome here. It's extremely difficult for the average American to even imagine that their own government could use violence or acts of violence against them in order to instill them with fear so that they can be subject to manipulation for political purposes. I draw the comparison with a woman who discovers evidence that her husband's been molesting their daughter,
right,
and that she suppresses it because it's so terrible. threatening to her core values and cherished beliefs. Now, psychologists describe this as cognitive dissonance,
right.
A phrase that appears at least once in your book. And I think that's part and parcel of what's going on here. I'm extremely heartened by these most recent poll results from the New York Times and CBS showing that only 16% of the American people accept the government's account of 9/11 without question, that some 53 or 54% think that the government is hiding, hiding the truth from the American people, and another 29% are convinced that most of what the government has told us is false. See, there are stages that you go through intellectually. The first stage is establishing what happened, or that it is the case, that, for example, the Twin Towers were destroyed by a special kind of controlled demolition from the top down. That Building 7 was brought down by controlled demolition. That no Boeing 757 hit the Pentagon. That the plane in Shanksville, Flight 93, was almost certainly shot down. I mean, you have to reach the point of accepting some of those establishments of something
after,
being the case.
After
that
5 years, though, Jim,
is the case before you reach the point of asking, well, why is it the case? Much less, you know, who would have benefited and ultimately been responsible for all of these things.
Well, after 5 years, shouldn't the leaders of this movement, though, step up to the plate and finally say, all right, we know all this. It's time for us to take the bull by the horns and point the finger. So keep that in mind.
Right, but first of all, you're the only one who's been even willing to come forward and publicly talk with us about this. Out of all the people, we sent you the same email we sent all of those.
Yeah.
And you're the only one, Jim.
Yeah, and you have to be commended for that.
I'm really glad you reached out to me because, you see, my commitment to truth overrides any sense of, political correctness. And, of course, there are distinctions that have to be drawn here that I want to return to. But just look here when you talk about the evidence that was found in the van, $4,700 in cash, foreign passports, box cutters.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Maps of New York City with certain monuments highlighted, recently taken photos of the men celebrating as the World Trade Center towers burned in the background. I mean, this is stunning stuff. Box cutters?
Yeah. You've
got to give me a break, right?
Yeah.
Plus the bomb
sniffing
dogs. Here's
the crucial thing, I think, when we pursue these issues. You have to distinguish between Jews generally and Judaism as a religion or Jews as an ethnic group or racial group from the Israeli government, from Israel as a state, from the Israeli government, and from the Israeli government's policies and the use of the Mossad.
Right.
Not only that, but, you know, someone else who's really been looking into this, Wayne Madsen, whose work is probably well familiar to you, has suggested that it's not quite so straightforward as to suggest, you know, that it was just the Israeli government. It's like it's a deviant variation, a kind of criminal mob. He calls the RUIM, the Russian-Ukrainian-Israeli Mafia, that he thinks had a key role here, but the politicians, absolutely, in my judgment, were complicit here. If your evidence is correct, and if all of my reflections on this matter are well founded, that Netanyahu's first reaction should be, when told about this, that it's very good for Israel,
which
I think is unquestionably his sincere reaction. And then he realized politically that's embarrassing,
uh-huh.
So he qualifies and said, "Well, not really good, but, you know," implying that, of course, now Americans will understand better what Israel goes through when it's
right.
subject to some kind of terrorist attack. And for Ariel Sharon to cancel, you know, a speech to an Israeli lobbying group in New York just the day before, that's quite striking. And, of course, you know, Donald Rumsfeld reported to Congress the day before 9/11 that they were missing $2.3 trillion. The Pentagon couldn't track $2.3 trillion.
Right,
and here you have Dov Zakheim, who's another dual citizenship Israeli, U.S. citizenship, who's the controller, who had to have had a key role here. And the idea that Donald Rumsfeld could be reporting this the day, you know, on a Monday is quite peculiar in relation to the way in which experienced Washington politicians operate. They never offer bad news on a Monday because then they can be dogged all week by reporters who want to follow it up. They do it on a Friday where there's going to be an interruption by the weekend and it gets lost by other news and events that intervenes. But so here he did it on a Monday, almost as though he was quite confident that it would soon be obliterated from the public consciousness, as indeed happened on Tuesday.
Now, Jim, your last comments about Judaism and so forth segues very well into my next question, because as you're well aware, last Saturday night, Kevin Barrett sat in on your radio show on RBN, and it became a quite controversial show because the guest was John Kaminsky. Now, yep. Lisa's going to read an email from a 9/11 researcher, but Kevin Barrett made two comments that I want to bring up first before Lisa jumps in. And he said first that he knows pro-Zionists who aren't bad people and that we have to be empathetic to them. And he also said later in the show that focusing inordinately on Israel's role in 9/11 could be a mistake. Now, John Kaminsky was dropping bombs during that show. He got cut off by Barrett. But here's an email that Lisa got from a 9/11 researcher. Then we want you to comment
and
on
it. And the reason we're bringing this in is because this person says some very good things about you, and we wanted you to hear them. Okay, it starts about Kevin Barrett. He's another guy who comes off as a government/Mossad plant. We've got to ask why certain people are selected to be the spokespersons for the truth movement. His being a Muslim is perfect. What are the fence sitters going to make of a guy like him? The racist majority, so to speak. A guy like Kevin just pushes that crowd towards the neocons/Mossad and away from the truth. Maybe he's not a plant, but people like this just slow things down. Jim Fetzer needs to pick his spokespersons for the scholars more carefully. If anyone knows the way the government works, it should be Jim. They don't call him JFK Jim for nothing. Moles and mockingbirds are the opposition. Anyone within the truth movement who doesn't realize that their presence, for whatever reason, can be problematic to the cause should be considered suspect. This includes the no-planers. Anyone who isn't in agreement with all the physical facts surrounding 9/11 should be put on their no-plane and sent on their way as soon as possible. It's bad enough that the Internet is full of government mind-twisters as it is. We don't need supposed scholars for truth turning off more people than they turn on. He wants to know why certain people are selected to be spokespersons for the truth movement, Jim.
Well, I don't think it doesn't really fall out quite that way. These things are all very circumstantial. I mean, that Kevin winds up being in this position of prominence occurred because he was invited onto a right-wing talk show here, Jessica McBride being the host, and she just blew up over the fact that he was discussing, 9/11 at all in this course on Islam.
Uh-huh.
It got generated around the state so that it was picked up by several state legislators, one in particular, a guy by the name of Steve Nass, who made it into a huge issue, even though he's completely ignorant. He doesn't know anything at all about 9/11. He tried to get special legislation passed by the legislature to have Kevin fired, notwithstanding the fact that once this became an issue, the university itself investigated the situation, reviewed his syllabi, his course evaluations, and had conversations with him and determined what he was doing was perfectly appropriate. About the time all this was breaking out, on the 9th of July, he and I were doing a joint session on 9/11 at something called the Midwest Social Forum held in Milwaukee at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee campus, because we both submitted proposals about 9/11 so that the program chairs put them together.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave a presentation on 9/11, using about 50 or 60 slides and brief videotapes, clips, and then Kevin talked about its significance. And subsequently, we gave a presentation on the 1st of October together, that was at a more academic setting right on the campus of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. The BBC had let me know they were coming. They were sending a crew here to interview me, and they were going to do it on Saturday. So I made a point of, since Kevin and I were going to plan to do this anyway, of having it done on Sunday so that they could also tape part or all of that presentation, too, which, of course, they did. And I think the net result in of getting me thrown into the mix where I can lay this out in a much broader compass, where I explain the absurdity of politicians attacking faculty for studying 9/11, given that 9/11 is, even by the government's own account, Bush would say, the pivotal event of the 21st century.
Correct.
Colleges and universities are institutions that study these historical events, so obviously we should be studying them, given that it's the government's own account is a conspiracy theory involving 19 Islamic fundamentalists and a guy in a cave off in Afghanistan. You cannot study this most significant historical event of the 21st century without getting involved in conspiracy theories, so that to call us conspiracy theorists because we're critics of the government's own conspiracy theory is simply self-serving and duplicitous, not to mention the key point Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11. A Senate Intelligence Committee has issued a report showing that Saddam and Al-Qaeda had nothing to do with one another, and in fact, Saddam was trying to track down and imprison and probably even kill leaders of Al-Qaeda. And a couple of months ago, and this occurred before I went on the Hannity and Combs with Ollie back on the 22nd of June, our own FBI has acknowledged that it has no hard evidence connecting Osama bin Laden to the events of 9/11.
Yep.
And I just say, well, if Saddam had nothing to do with it, and if Osama had nothing to do with it,
right,
then who did? Someone
right
was responsible.
Right.
It's absurd
somebody did it. Yeah.
To suggest that faculty at colleges and universities across the country should not be studying this event to figure out what actually happened and why.
Yeah. Well, Jim, I wasn't going to ask you about this, but since Lisa brought up the subject from that email about the no-planers, I know a couple months ago you literally went through some hell that was brought on by some people that you know, I'm not even going to mention their names, but it was in regard to this whole no-plane nonsense, and they really raked you through the coals and just did some things to you that was inexcusable, in my opinion. What are your thoughts on this now and what they did to you and the techniques they used to try to bully you or strong-arm you into this no-plane corner?
Okay, well, let me come back to that because I want to say more in response to Lisa's question regarding Kevin on
okay
the air. So, you know, the station, Republic Broadcasting Network, was shifting us from Thursdays to Saturday. So it was the first time they were making the switch.
Okay.
I had a conflict on Saturday. I wanted to have a substitute host, so I invited Kevin to make his appearance. Now, the way in which these TV networks like Hannity and Combs occur and all that, they pick you. You don't have the opportunity to tell them, you know, you want to come on their show
right
and get on. They reach
right
out and bring in people that they think will be useful to them. And that's
right
the right way to think of it. They're going to bring people in they think will be useful to them. And if it's useful to them to bring somebody on so they can berate him, humiliate him, you know, assail him, by God, that's what they're going
to
do.
And you seem to foil their plans, though,
deliberately,
Jim,
about what they're going to do and the reason they're bringing you in. For example,
yeah,
as I was riding in the taxi between LAX and the hotel in downtown LA where the American Scholars Conference would be held that Alex Jones had organized, I was talking to a producer for Hannity and Combs. He was telling me they wanted to have me on to talk about the findings of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. And I gave him this absolutely crystal clear summation in about 10 to 12 minutes of our key findings. But when I was taken out to the station, I made a point of having the TV turned on so I could see how they were pitching it. And 5 minutes before I go on, I realize they're saying on television, you won't believe what our kids are being taught by faculty.
Yeah.
Stand by. And I know what's going on. I know they don't know enough about what they think they know to get it right. I decide I'm going to use this phrase that they have foxed their facts. And I know I've got to pronounce it very carefully, right?
Uh-huh.
I was able to pull the rug out from them under immediately because I knew where they were coming from and how they had it wrong and how they miscast the situation. And ironically, the same sort of thing would happen when they had me on the second time. I was even able to use the same phrase. I couldn't believe it, that they had foxed their facts again.
Yeah, you certainly foiled their plans, as we saw in both of your appearances, because I thought they thought they were going to steamroll you, and you totally turned the table.
You know, Jim, the thing that concerns me about Kaminsky's appearance with Barrett is that they know Kaminsky's not going to pussyfoot and sugarcoat. He's going to express his ideas and opinions very strongly. He throws verbal bombs. He's a bomb thrower.
Yeah.
And they know that ahead of time. So when they invite him on there, and then they don't let him fully express what he wants to say, but then they turn around and do to him, basically cast him the way you were cast on mainstream, and then say that they're offended. The First Amendment is supposed to protect the unpopular opinion.
Sure, of course.
You know, and why not let him just go on?
All this appeal to generalized sentiment, you know, you're even finding the president saying that if the courts aren't fulfilling the people's will, then the courts are at fault. When the courts have to be standing up for minority rights, this is not a country just majority rule. It's majority rule with minority rights. If you only have majority rule, you have the mentality of the lynch mob.
Exactly.
But to return now very specifically to this, Kevin did not know a great deal about John Kaminsky. I had talked to John Kaminsky about having him come on with me at some point in time. When we had this second show very soon, I just suggested to Kevin it might be interesting to have John Kaminsky on with him because Kevin has founded a society that is attempting to bring together the views of Muslims, Jews, and Christians.
Right.
So that, you know, and he knows quite a lot about relevant distinctions. And we even talked about making the kind of distinction I made a moment ago between Jews Jews and Judaism versus the state of Israel versus the government of the state of Israel versus the policies of the government of the state of Israel and the Mossad, see? So, I mean, I was glad to have Kevin having this discussion with Kaminsky because I was confident Kevin would draw out the relevant distinctions and help to put this in perspective. Now, the first, I haven't listened to it yet, but the first hour, I gather, was very cordial, very,
right.
You know, informative, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. During the second hour, things got a little more heated.
Correct.
Now, what happened about 45 minutes through, actually, you wouldn't know this at all, but the guy who runs the whole network, a fellow named John Stadtmiller,
oh, yeah, we heard that.
Said to Kevin he thought he should cut off Kaminsky.
Right. Now, no, he came on the
actual
broadcast.
To tell you the truth, I wouldn't let anyone tell me to cut anybody off.
Right.
Good for
okay?
you.
But Kevin, listen, this is the first time he'd ever hosted a show. He's doing it at my invitation.
Right.
I have immense confidence in him. Believe me, I know this guy. This is a good man. He's a fascinating guy. He's fluent in French and Arabic as well as English. He has traveled around the world. He's a very sophisticated guy. He is nobody's fool. He has taken risks that no one else in the movement has taken by being out there. And he has got this this astonishing capacity to be provocative by making points that are extremely telling and evoke responses that have given us the kind of publicity money cannot buy.
Oh, you're right.
The fact
there.
That these state legislators have made this a big deal means everyone in Wisconsin knows about the 9/11 issues.
Yeah.
And when I come down here to reinforce him, it means I can have tremendous impact. In fact, since I got down here, virtually all of the public criticism of Kevin Barrett has ceased.
Good.
Because I've gone on to make those points, like the ones I was making to you about the absurdity of attacking faculty from doing what the faculty are supposed to do, to figure out what the facts are. You see, I mean, people like even the governor of this state, who happens to be a Democrat, and his opponent, who's a congressional representative, who have called for Kevin Barrett to be fired. But I think, on the part of the Democratic governor, just is not willing to get into an issue where he didn't know enough about it. So he's seeking to neutralize it as an issue, because if they both have the same attitude, then, of course, it's not going to count with the voters one way or another.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the University of Wisconsin, Madison has been very strong in supporting academic freedom and supporting Kevin, and this goes from the head of the Board of Regents to the provost to even the chancellor.
And we have to give them credit for that. And since you mentioned Wisconsin, I remember, I hope you do too, when we did Wisconsin Public Radio. You remember back in 2004? This was some
Duke
of the...
Duke Scorridge.
Remember that, Jim?
Yeah.
It was a hell of a show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Jim, I want to give you a chance.
Remember, too, of course, Wisconsin is also the home not only of Gene McCarthy, but of McCarthy.
Right.
Well, Jim, McCarthy.
Quickly, before I ask you one other question.
Joe McCarthy, Joe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The no-planers, they really raked
through
the polls.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on this now, a couple months after?
It's okay. I don't care. They can go ahead and brutalize me all they want. That doesn't matter. I have the height of a rhinoceros.
You
now, the fact
do.
Of the matter is that Morgan Reynolds had gotten hooked on this stuff. He'd
right.
written a piece, and what he did was, in his discussion about the Pentagon and his discussion about Shanksville was very, very good, and I thought it would be, it's another controversial hypothesis that, in my opinion, is worth having out there. So I put it up on the website. It's still on the resources page as a study from the point of view of raising questions about whether planes actually impacted the building. I added a couple additional studies with it that were arguing the opposite. He has since then been invited to submit an article, a study about the no-planer thesis in relation to the World Trade Center to the journal. And my understanding, now this is my impression, but I'm fairly confident about this or I wouldn't mention it, is that it went through several reviews and was not accepted for publication in the journal. Now, that would not mean that necessarily that he's wrong about the thesis. He could be right about the thesis and hadn't argued it well enough, or he could be right about the thesis and argued it well enough and there was some kind of bias on the part of the referees. But I know Steve Jones well enough to know he was sincere when he invited that there be a submission of articles, which they'd still be glad to receive.
Yeah.
Now, this may be some sort of temporary setback or an occasion to attack the Journal of 9/11 Studies as well as scholars. But in fact, I think that Steve and I are both open-minded to the extent that we're willing to consider alternative hypotheses and new evidence. evidence. I frankly think that the thesis of no planes at the in New York is verges on the absurd. I
so
think
do
the
we.
Amount of evidence when you have all the photographs and eyewitness reports and ear witness reports.
Yeah.
Make it virtually impossible that those buildings not have been hit with planes that were at least of the general configuration of 767s. Personally, I'm inclined to think they may have been military versions that were jet refueled, have a greater fuel capacity to create a more spectacular fireball and have a greater potential for or causing fires.
Yeah, I think you're on the right path there. The thing we just didn't like was what they did to you and their technique. So
he gave it right back to
him. Yeah, he did. Now, Jim, we have to move on here, and you've been criticized in some quarters, and this is going to segue into Lisa's question, but you've been criticized in some quarters about pushing a Democratic agenda. And
okay.
I want Lisa to follow up on this now. So
what I want to talk to you about is this petition being sent around recently by Michael Morrissey. Michael Morrissey is trying to basically get people to vote Democrat, get 9/11 websites to sign his petition. He's stated in emails, and I've exchanged emails with him, and I think he's very thoughtful. I don't think he's a bomb thrower, and I think he's well-intentioned. But he sent emails around saying that if the people on the 9/11 websites don't sign this petition, they are politically dangerous to the cause, and they are stupid, infantile, and should be denounced if necessary. So I started emailing him back and forth and said, listen, I need to weigh in on this because I've received several emails from you. How can voting Democrat, promoting the whole right-left paradigm status quo, help us when, if you apply the litmus test, which is, are these political candidates telling the truth about 9/11? Are they confronting the Bush administration with something more than just lie-hop theories, or are they totally avoiding it at all? The litmus test is 9/11 truth.
And there has been nobody in Congress, nobody, that's been on the floor of the House or Senate that said 9/11 is a lie, 9/11 was an inside job. So are people
look at
correct?
The controlled demolition.
Yeah.
They won't even Cynthia McKinney.
Yeah.
She
well,
won't come out and say this.
Let me offer several different opinions. In my judgment, the Democrats are a bunch of spineless wimps. And, you know, I've been acutely disappointed with them. In terms of the Republicans, we can expect more tax cuts for the rich, more wars, and, you know, seemingly endless corruption.
Uh-huh.
So that it would be nice if we had viable alternatives. In fact, coincidentally, I happen to be supporting the Green candidate for United States Senate in Minnesota. And I've even made a commercial for him, actually two 30-minute spots that are running even as we speak, where I explained that I looked for a candidate, you know, and here was a Democrat, and they got this Amy who's great, but that the Democrats have been spineless wimps, that from the Republicans we could expect just what I described. And then I discovered, you know, this guy who stood for universal health care, for bringing the troops home from Iraq, from integrity in voting, and for, you know, cleaning up corruption, and I said I was so envious I turned green.
Jim, a half-truth is still a whole lie. This lie-hop theory is not accurate, patently, on its face.
Oh, let me go back and continue what I was seeking to say.
Okay.
Say, Scholars for 9/11 Truth is not an activist organization. It's a research organization.
We
are seeking to establish what happened, the truth about 9/11. We're interested in exposing falsehoods and establishing truth. That's what we do. Now, we are in the midst of that, we're seeking to inform the American people through lectures and symposia and articles and books and, of course, the website and talk shows and whatever other access routes we have. It is our... we do not have a position about what the American people should do about it as a society.
Right.
Now, if I'm asked as an individual what you should do about once you know the truth, I have said vote them all out. The Congress has to be completely reconstituted because it's so completely corrupt. Vote them all out.
Right.
What you also have to do, however, to ensure that your vote counts is get rid of these electronic voting machines without any paper trail.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
I also say that the district attorneys and the attorneys general in the states where these crimes were committed ought to be opening investigations, grand jury inquiries, and I'm acutely disappointed that none of that has happened yet. I'm very fearful, of course, that the Bush administration is going to pull another false flag operation before this election. Karl Rove and George W. are walking around with these smirks on their face, and Rove has been assuring Republicans who are very worried the way all the out with a national intelligence estimate, with Woodward's book, with a Foley scandal, and we, you know, everything else that just makes this a catastrophic situation for the Republicans, that something is going to happen that's going to save them. Karl Rove has been saying this. Now, we have this immense naval flotilla headed toward Iran, and it's going to go into the Persian Gulf and the Eastern Mediterranean, and on the 21st, they're going to be in position. I will not be surprised if the United States attacks Iran on or about the 21st of October. They think this is going to create a resurgence of rallying around the flag, and because it's such close proximity to the election, that people are going to vote in favor of Bush, regardless of all the scandals, the corruption, regardless of all the massive deficits, I'm not sure it's going to work. Iran is a very powerful country. Iran has a tremendous arsenal of anti-ship weapons. When Israel went into Lebanon, I said to my wife that the whole outcome would hinge on whether Hezbollah had sophisticated anti-tank weapons and knew how to use them. They did.
Right.
They did. They brought Israel to a stalemate. That is utterly astonishing. It's never happened before in the Middle East. It created a huge surge of pride in all of the Arab nations over Hezbollah's having this capacity to bring Israel to a halt. And I say it's going to be analogous in relation to this vast assortment of ships. In my opinion, the Iranians have enough sophisticated missiles to take out every single ship in the Persian Gulf. I'm talking all of them.
Mm-hmm.
If there are 20 there, they can take out all 20, I guarantee you. I believe if we attack Iran, and even if this is with tactical nuclear weapons, which is going to make us the most despised country in world history, because
we're
the only nation that's used nuclear weapons in the past, and to use them again, even as tactical nukes, is going to resurrect this image of the United States. It's going to be, the country is going to be known as by the skull and crossbones, not by the red, white, and blue.
Yeah.
It's going to be the greatest military catastrophe in history. We are going to suffer all kinds of casualties. It's going to escalate. It's inevitable. It's going to draw in Russia and China. The situation here is potentially catastrophic. It could even lead to the mass destruction of Israel. So the fact that the Israelis are supporting it is beyond me. It's completely irrational. It's bizarre. It's self-defeating, and may even lead to the ultimate annihilation of the Jewish state.
I don't know how anyone could say it any better than that.
Yes.
I mean, you just summed up, really, Jim, world events in about 3 minutes right there, and you're dead right on the mark. I mean, right on the mark.
Jim, give everybody the website addresses again.
Sure. ST911.org is where you find it. If you want to know anything about me, just punch my name into Google, and you'll get my home site where it says, you know, it starts off as James H. Fetzer was born in Pasadena, California, and you can read a bio sketch on me and check out my Vita and all the books I've published and articles and everything else you ever wanted to know about yours truly. But I want to say I'm very proud of you for authoring this book, Victor. I think it's very, very well done. And even though I wouldn't imply that it's the last word, I think you've done tremendously important work in opening up an area of investigation that we cannot shy away from. If we want to understand the truth, we got to confront the full range of alternatives. And frankly, I don't see how we can have a complete explanation of what happened on 9/11 without taking into account the role of the Israeli government in contributing to bringing about these events.
Well, then that poses the question, why are the prominent 9/11 truth groups and individuals shying away from it altogether and refusing to address it and telling us they're not interested in discussing it if they really want the truth to come out?
Why is that?
Well, I think they don't know enough. That's just why I would sit here and encourage everyone with a serious interest to read your book. Your book is going to be, you know, it's mind expanding. It requires you to stretch your intellect to encompass alternatives you might prefer to ignore. A lot of them are worried that they're going to be attacked as anti-Semitic and make themselves vulnerable to a kind of smear that is very easily produced
and very easily refuted in American
politics, but for which, in my judgment, when you draw the relevant distinctions, there's absolutely no justification whatsoever. And in here, I think, we get to one further point, which is, of course, the enormous influence of Israel on the conduct of American government.
Right.
I was astonished to learn that Israeli lobbyists aren't even required to register as agents of a foreign government.
Yeah.
That is stunning. In fact, it was Scott Ritter, the former UN weapons of mass destruction inspector, who was on an Air America broadcast, who made that point, and how things would be transformed dramatically if only Israeli lobbyists lobbyists were required to register.
Yeah,
well, that's a great point. Would
it
you,
says a lot, doesn't it?
I want to thank you for not only coming on to Wing TV, but for your also your kind comments. And this has been thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyable. And I want everybody out there listening, because I know once they see Jim Fetzer's name on the Wing TV homepage, a lot of people are going to listen to this. But Jim Fetzer is a man of courage. And I don't think there can be any more fitting words to close this interview out than
he is
a man of courage.
As I told Jim in an email, if Bill O'Reilly had been a man of courage and integrity, he would have given Jim a chance to speak. And he obviously was afraid to do that because he knew Jim would crush him. And I fully believe Jim would have and could have crushed him if given the opportunity. So, Jim, I just want to thank you. And I know that your retirement isn't going to be much of a retirement because now you're going to be doing even more regarding exposing the truth about 9/11 than you did before when you were working.
Well, thank you. Thank you both of you so much and for all your good work. And Victor, I want to compliment you on this book. I think it's a very important contribution to 9/11 research.
Well, thank you very much. And also, as you know, we couldn't think more highly of the Scholars for 9/11 Truth and the work you've done.
And that doesn't mean we get along all the time or agree all the time, but we do have respect for you, Jim, and we admire you.
That's exactly right. Well, Jim, good luck with everything, and thanks again for coming on. We'll be back tomorrow on Wing TV. Until then, keep your eyes open because there's a lot going on.
See everybody then.